Like to learn in Parashat Noach is Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11. There are 9 psukim. There is so much that has been written about these 9 psukim. It is a most magnificent way to begin a study of Chumash, because we're going to see the absolute beauty and grandeur of a Torah text. Let's read it. We all know the story, but now we're going to analyze it. Vayihi kol ha'aretz sapa echad u'dvarim achadim. The entire earth was one language. Everybody spoke one language. Rashi says it was Lashon HaKodesh. Everybody spoke Hebrew. U'dvarim achadim. And things were one. Difficult phrase to understand. What is meant by Dvarim Achadim? There are going to be different approaches by the Meforshim. If anything, the one impression that we're left with is there was an absolute unity in the world. Dvarim Achadim may mean that their goals were similar. They were united in all sorts of other ways, aside from language, goals, objectives. Rav Shamshon referred to Hirsch, and there are a number of others, even Eben Ezra and others, seem to say that even in one language, there can be all sorts of dialects in one language. I, as an American, can speak an American Northeast, formally. A New Yorker could have some difficulty understanding a Southerner. Certainly have a great deal of difficulty understanding somebody from England or South Africa or Australia. I have a shul in Haranof, and we have who knows how many dialects of English. So Dvarim Achadim could be that not only was the language one, but there was only one dialect. There were no different forms of the language. Now, in terms of the differences within one language, not only is it a difference of dialects, the way a word is pronounced, and there can be quite very big differences between the way people in one part of the world and another part of the world will speak English. But there's also a form of expression, the English. Oh, that's smashing. You will not find a self-respecting American saying about something that it's smashing. He may have said a few years ago that it's cool. In the 60s, he may have said that it's groovy. You know, there are all sorts of different uses of words, and different words that have different meanings.
Last time in England, there was a flashlight.
You're right, they won't know what a flashlight is. What do they call it?
A torch.
And a lift, right? And an underground. And even expressions have... I don't remember hearing it in New York. I come to Canada, I'll give you a shout. Do you know what I'll give you a shout means? I'll call you on the phone. Yes, I'll give you a shout. I'll ring you up is American. No? That's British. So what do Americans say?
Canadians
say, I'll give you a shout. Now, I'm sure that if we spend time, we're going to find all sorts of different phrases that have different meanings for different people, though they're all speaking the same language. Dvorim Achodim means not only was the Safa Echad, the language was one, but there was only one dialect. Any person on the face of this earth would speak to another one. There would be absolutely no difference between what one was saying and the other. That means it was absolute perfect communication. I say that's one approach to Dvarim Achadim, and we also said Dvarim Achadim can mean that their goals and objectives were similar. According to some of the Mefarshim, Dvarim Achadim can mean that they owned things together. There was no such thing as mine and yours. Everything was ours. Let's say that it was the classic communist, Marxist, Leninist society. It was all for one and one for all. Yes, everything belonged to everybody. Vayehi, and it came to pass Benosam Mikedem, when they journeyed from the east, they migrated from the east. They found a valley Be'eretz Shinar, in the land of Shinar, which is Bavel. Vayeshu Sham, and they settled down there. Vayomru Yishal Reyeyu, and they said one to another, Let us make bricks. Let us make bricks. V'nisrifa l'sreifa, and we will burn a fire. What we're talking about is a kiln, it would seem, where they're going to make bricks. Vatihilahem halaveno le'evan, the brick became their stone, v'achemar, and the mortar, hayolahem l'chomer, was their clay. What's taking place in this pasuk is a tremendous step forward technologically for man. Up until that point, man built his home by using the natural materials of his environment. You used stone, and you used clay. Put stone upon stone. Of course, that was very limiting. It meant, of course, that you could only build homes where there was stone. Areas where there was no stone, you didn't have the wherewithal to build. Here they come to a valley where there are no stones. Man's ingenuity now has to come to the fore. How is he going to provide shelter? So they invented the brick. Do you know what the invention of the brick means? The invention of the brick means that man can build wherever he wants. Not only man can build wherever he wants, he can build as large and as tall as he wants, because it's not a matter of schlepping big, heavy stones one on top of another. You just add brick to brick, brick to brick, put the mortar in between, and you have an edifice. We're talking about most probably after the wheel. This was the greatest technological achievement of man. Yes?
In verse Aleph and in verse 6, the verse begins with Vayehi. So we know that Vayehi is Lashon Tzar. Does this mean that the Torah looks negatively at what is happening in the first couple of Pesukim?
Good question. Let's wait. We're going to have to see what happens over here. Meanwhile, we have a story. So far, what does it seem like to you? Is everything fine? Could it be better?
No, because of the Bible.
Yeah, but wait a minute. No. You see, the point that I want to make is what we can learn from these nine psukim, which are known as the Dor HaFlogah, or the generation of the Tower of Babel. You know what we can learn from here? To let the Pasuk speak. Don't try and force anything into the Pasuk. Over here, we're going to make believe. You never learned the Pasuk Chumash before in your life. You don't know a word of Hebrew. We're going to read a story. We're going to read a story and let the Torah speak to us. And there may be all sorts of questions. So now I'm going to ask my question again. Is anything wrong? Is anything wrong? Would you say that everything is absolutely magnificent? Isn't this what we look forward to? Yemot HaMashiach, a whole world united? Speak, they talk this.
Why did they all of a sudden find the meaning for building?
Oh, because they had migrated to the east.
And
they came to this valley. It may be that they found a valley that was very fertile, so that it had other. It had other.
They built in valleys before, and then there's intent.
It may very well be that more and more people.
Suddenly found the need to give up tents. Did something present itself? In the Hebrew,
the only thing that would occur to me is that many people gathered in this valley, and if there are many people gathering in the valley, then you know what? You can't necessarily build outward or even pitch tents outward. You know what you're going to have to start doing? You're going to have to move upward. Go take all of the people in Har Nof and put them in two-story buildings. You'd need half of Yerushalayim. So what happened? You built up. It seems people joined together there. A lot of people, they have to build. Okay. So necessity is the mother of invention. Here comes the invention. Vayomru, when they said, Hova nivna lonu ir, let us build a city, umigdol with a tower, v'roshel bashamayim, and it's the top going up to the very heavens. V'nasel lonu shame, let's make a name for ourselves, pen ofutz, al pnei kol ha'aretz, lest we be dispersed throughout the world. They want to stay together. They want unity. What happens if somebody is going to go off journeying somewhere in search of something, or even people who are going to go out a number of days journey with their sheep and with their cattle, how will they find their way back? They're going to see that tower, and that's the way they're going to make their way back home. This parasha, as I said, has 9 psukim. The first 4 psukim have described the situation to us. We've just now learned 4 psukim. They've described the situation. From now on and further, there are going to be 5 psukim that are going to describe God's response, His reaction to what man has done. Vayered Hashem lirot et ha'ir, God went down to see the city, ve'et ha'migdal, and the tower, asher banu bnei ha'adam, that man built. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, Hain, behold, they are Am Echad, one people, V'sofa Achat L'chulam, and all have one language. God already is talking about Am Echad. Am comes from the word Im, together. Here we clearly hear that their goals and their objectives are the same. One people, one language to all of them, and that's why they have been able to begin. That's why they've begun building the city and the tower. The Atma now, in the normal course of events, lo ye batzer mehem, it will not be withheld from them. In the normal course of events, they're going to be able to succeed in what they plan on doing. Kol asher yosnu lasot, everything that they think of doing, they're now going to be able to do it. Because you have all of the ingredients that are necessary for success. One people, one goal, one objective, one language. Hova, let us go, Nerdo, we'll go down, v'novlo sham svatam, and we will confuse their tongues, asher lo yishmu ish svat ve'eyu, that one should not understand the language of his friend. Vayochetz Hashem otam isham, and God dispersed them from there. Since they didn't speak the same language anymore, they all went off in different directions. and they stopped building the city. Alkein Koroshomo Bavel, that's why the place was called Bavel. Kisham Balal Hashem Svat Kol Ha'aretz, because their God confused or withered away. Balal comes from the word withering, so they lost the ability to speak one language. And from there God dispersed them upon the face of the whole earth. There is the text. And obviously, the question that arises, and that all of the Mefarshim since the very beginning of time have dealt with, the one question: what did these people do that was wrong? It seems God is unhappy with what they've done. No, what's wrong? One people, one language, all united, all for one, one for all. God goes down, takes a look. This must stop. If we let them go, who knows? They will succeed in what they're going to do. And therefore, their plan must be frustrated, stopped now. What was wrong? What did they do wrong? Yes. Huh? All right. What was their goal? Okay, good question. All right. So there are two things that are necessary here. I'm not sure which one comes first. As we go through the Mefarshim, we're going to take a journey through the Mefarshim. Each one of the Mefarshim is going to approach it, in a sense, from their own subjective point of view. However, each one is going to find some phrase, some word in the parasha, which is an indication that this is what was wrong. The Medrash says, Dor HaMabul, the generation of the Mabul, their sin was clearly stated. It says that the entire world became full of violence, and therefore God had to destroy the world. The generation of the Tower of Babel, Lo Mit Parsha Chataam, their sin was not clearly stated. What did they do wrong? Which therefore leaves it now open for us for interpretation. What did they do wrong? What was so terrible? And what may be fascinating is that each one of the Mefarshim, as they deal with it, may very well be looking at it from their own point of view. What's even more fascinating is that it was probably one of the most contemporary and relevant parashiyot in Torah. All right? I'm not even sure myself where to begin, but maybe we should begin with Rashi, which Rashi also raises all sorts of difficulties, and then we'll have to understand Rashi. Rashi says that the sin of the generation of the Tower of Babel was the sin of idolatry. On the first pasuk, Vayehi b'nosam, Vayehi kol ha'aretz, Sofa echad, Rashi says that the language that they had was Lashon HaKodesh, u'dvorim achadim. Rashi says, what does dvorim achadim mean? Bo be'itza achad, they came with one counsel, one idea, all were unified. V'amru, when they said, Lo kol himenu, God has no right to take the heavens unto himself. Let's go up to the very heavens and wage war with him. Let's go up to the heavens and wage war with him. We have to understand what Rashi is talking about. Does puny little man think he's going to really be able to go up to the heavens and wage war with God? Huh? How will they wage war with him? Yes, so we have the Empire State Building. You see, already I've dated myself. I should have said the World Trade Center. First Canada Place. What do you mean we're going to go up there? We're going to build a big building, and therefore we're going to wage war. How do you wage war with God? Rashi doesn't stop there. Rashi says, Dover Acha, Dvorim, Achodim. So the first chapter, Rashi, Achodim means they are unified. They are one in purpose. So now the question we're going to have to ask is, how does Rashi know that? How does Rashi know that they've decided to wage war with God? What a foolish thing for puny little man to even attempt. The second thing Rashi says, Achadim, they had Dvarim against the Echad, the one of the world. Al Yechido Shel Olam, they were against him. And a third pshat, Dvarim Achadim, they said, once every 1,656 years, the Mabul came in the year 1,656 from creation. This was 400 years later. They said that every 1,656 years, the very heavens simply collapsed. What we're going to have to do is, we're just going to have to build structures that will hold the heavens up there. Strange. Strange. On the next pasuk, and they journeyed, the Nosam Ikedem, they journeyed from the east, Shahu Yoshuf Shom, they lived in the east. And here we have an answer to your question, was it Rivka? Is that your name? I'm impressed with myself. All right. Here we have, Rashi says, why did they journey? Why did they migrate? So Rashi says, you know why they migrated? Because they went to find Latur Lehem Akom, to find a place, Lahachaziket Kulam, that will hold all of them. They wanted to all stay together. Man was becoming fruitful and multiplying on the face of this earth, and wherever it was that they were living wasn't enough place, they went to find some place that would hold them all. So they found Shinar, Babel, except that it didn't have those materials that we usually used for construction. So they came up with the great technological advance of the brick. I remember what's happened over here. All of these people are the direct descendants of Noah and his three children. Not only that, Shem, the son of Noah, is still alive. Avram is already in his 40s. Shem and Aver and Reu and Srug and Peleg, they're all alive. In other words, people who had lived through the Mabul are there, living there. Which means that the world started all over again with a belief in one God. We're now reaching the point 400 years later where serious, serious problems have begun to develop on the face of this earth. And we're going to have to find that in the psalm. Rashi says it was idolatry. How do we know that it was idolatry? How does Rashi know that? And so far, all that we've seen, Rashi says, Dvarim Achadim, against the one God. I don't know. Difficult. But we're going to find Rashi saying something very profound. And we're going to have to view Rashi through the eyes of the other Mepharshim. And we'll see. They said to one another, Rashi says, one nation to another. In other words, they were different nations because they were different tribes. Call them tribes. There was Mitzrayim and Cush and Put and Canaan. All of them had been listed before in the parasha. There were all sorts of different people. They said to one another, Hava, let's go. Hava means to prepare yourself. Let's do something together. We're going to work. They discover the brick and they begin to build. All right, so we have these Vayomru, Hova Nivna Lanu Ir Umigdol Pasuk Dalet. Now, if we want to find what was their sin, the most logical thing would be to look at the first four psukim and see what it is that we can find from the first four psukim. Incidentally, we're also going to see Mepharshim according to whom either there was no sin here at all, or they had not yet sinned. But the possibility is that if things continue the way they are, terrible things are going to happen in the end. I'm trying to figure out where to start. You know what? I'm going to start with Rav Ovadia Misoferno, one of the Rishonim of Forash and Chumash. Let's see how he reads it. On Pasuk Dalet, and most of the Mepharshim, that's the Pasuk that they deal with. They said, Havon Nivnolon, let's build a city, Migdol with a tower, the Roshel Bashamayim, goes up to the very heavens, we'll make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed upon the entire earth. The Sephornos... Good. So wait a minute. What does it mean to you? Let's see, what does that tell you? Is there something wrong with wanting to live together?
No.
Strength and unity.
Yes, I mean, so what's wrong with it?
That, scattered. I mean, it says,
I don't know that. Why they're concerned? I can understand why they're concerned. Come on, you're good friends, your neighbors, you don't want to really see them go or see them get lost. The whole mishpucha. Yeah, lest they be dispersed. They can end up all over the world. Come on, don't parents want their children living nearby? Do we want our... We're living in a very migratory society. But this is not the way it always was. I mean, even in Europe, the same family would be born... They would be born and they would die in the same house for centuries. And today, you know, children end up all four corners of the... all four corners of the world. They didn't want their kids going off who knows where. Or friends and neighbors, you know, parting is...
They don't hear as the cousins. Well, maybe it was the military power. They were afraid of other people. Were there other people?
There were no other people. They were the only ones. So let me... All right, we'll start with the Mepharshim one by one. We'll see, and we'll go through as many as we can, and you're going to get the idea. Yes?
The previous chapter on the... 31,
which means that they have more than one Lashon, and then right here, the first one we have, because what had happened was, in the parent before, they've given us the whole story of all of the 10 generations. This is, so to speak, a flashback.
Oh,
that's what they call it, Bivrit. A flashback to the days of Aver and Peleg, and there we got the whole listing of all of the families.
Right.
So now watch. We're going to get some a number of very interesting things over here. The Sephorno, really, it's pasuk hey. Vayeded Hashem lid'otet ha'ir v'et hamigdal. God went down to see the city and the tower that men had built. He says a general rule, whenever it says Vayeded Hashem Lidot, God went down to see, it means that man has not yet sinned. Vayeded, the term Vayeded is used in Chazal as well. For example, Ben Sodet Umora, the rebellious child. The Gemara says, Nidon, he is judged, al shem sofer, what's going to happen at the end. Yorda Torah, the son of Dato, the Torah went down and saw what the end of this nice little bicycle who just was bar mitzvah a few months ago, but we already see the beginnings of what are going to be a tragic end. Vayedet Hashem lirot, and he says the same thing is true by stone. God goes down to see, means he's taking a closer look. It's not that they have sinned terribly, but there's something wrong with their plans that will eventually bring to terrible, terrible things. For example, by the Dora Mabul, the generation of the Mabul, it doesn't say that God went down to see. God knew. He saw that they had, the world had become full of violence. Here he goes down. Watch. He may lashon ha-yedida, the Sephora says, the term yedida, going down lirot, to see. Ye omer al hakel yidbarach. It is said about God, kishein ha-inyen az ra'ul la'onesh. They are not yet worthy of punishment. They haven't done anything that's terrible. But it's only because of the fact that God sees that something terrible is going to develop. Just as by Ben Sore Rumore. Ki onnam lo hayorishon az yotem yishar ho'umot kedei lanshan. They were not evil. They were not evil at the time. And he's saying that even about Sodom, the Sodom that we're going to learn about in 2 weeks, they had not reached the point of absolute evil. They were not too good to the poor, but they were no worse than other nations of the world. But God saw that Sodom was going to become a terrible, terrible place. Okay. Now, Hein Amechad, I just want to get one shot in, so then we'll begin to get a picture of what's happening here. Hein an echad, they are one people. Ki omnom habitul hamefer atzad goyim, umeini machshivot hu hamachloket hakorei beinehem. I'm going to read this again, and I'm going to translate it, and it's going to be very important. He says, do you know what destroys the evil of nations? Machloket, difference of opinion. Very often we think that machloket is a terrible thing. Is there anything worse than machloket? Machloket can be a blessing, an absolute blessing. When all people think the same way, do you know what happens? All people have to think the same way. And the one who's going to think otherwise is going to be condemned by that society. It means a society that will never be able to think otherwise. And that's destructive of mankind. I'll give you an example. God says about man, it's no good that the man is alone. E'eselo, I'm going to make for him a wife who will be Ezer Kenegdo. So everybody knows Rashi that brings the Gemara. If man is worthy, she is an Ezer, she's an helpmate. If man is unworthy, Kenegdo, she stands against him. There's another pshat. And I believe that other pshat is going to illuminate to us what's taking place over here. The other pshat is, Esalo, I'm going to make for man Ezer, a one who is helpmate, and you know how she is helpmate? By being Kenegdo. By standing up and questioning and expressing another opinion. Does man really want, an intelligent man, does he really want a wife who's going to be a yes lady? Everything yes. And maybe king husband is wrong. Do you know how man achieves real intellectual greatness? Only through difference of opinion. Difference of opinion is fruitful for the mind, for the intellect, for human growth and human development. The worst thing for man is where all people have to think precisely the same way. Do you know where you have that? That's a totalitarian. A totalitarian society is a society where man is afraid to speak. Man is afraid to utter his own opinion. Because there's one opinion, and there's one approach, and that's the only one that's acceptable. Anything else is totally unacceptable. Do you know what God sees now? God sees that if they continue the way they are, and there isn't the blessed difference of opinion. Now remember, What does the Mishnah Pirkei Avot say? There's two kinds of machloket. There is a machloket l'shem shamayim, a machloket where the intent is good, so falit kayim, something good is going to come out of that. Then there is, of course, machloket, which is only for the sake of creating division amongst people. That's destructive. But difference of opinion is healthy. Healthy. Says the Sifuno, habitul hadmefer atzad goyim, that which can destroy the evil council of nations, umeini machshavot, and can remove thoughts that are bad, is hamachloket hakorei beinam. If there's going to be difference of opinion, in the sibat hadatot, in the sibat halashonot, either because of the difference between religions, it may be the difference in languages, so people think differently. These people were all one as far as religion. They all agreed to their some kind of an idol worship of theirs. And together with one religion, they also agreed Beloshon in their language. Which means, do you know what? Now nothing is going to stop them. In Cain Ein Monea Lahem Mehashlin Kavanatam, therefore nothing is going to stop them now from their intent, which means that whatever it is they believe, all mankind will believe. V'lo yifna echot mehem ladata tabore, none are going to turn now to know God. God is going to be forgotten on the face of this earth. Because there's nobody who's going to have the courage to think for himself. The Heper said, but you know what? The exact opposite is going to happen when there's going to be machloket bein ha'umot, difference of opinion between the nations. Even if the difference is in their various idols and their pagan and heathen practices, they're going to have to reach some point in time where, well, one may finally reach the point of saying, well, I have my idol and you have yours, but there may be one that is greater than them all. The difference of opinion, the ability to dissent, this is what was lacking in the world, according to the Sephora. Powerful words. Yes? Because they were already worshipping other gods. There would be nobody now. Man would be frightened. Listen, we've watched for 72 years a totalitarian society. What did communism do in order to survive? Stalinist, Leninist, Marxist communism. There was no such thing as a difference of opinion. There was only one opinion, and that was the opinion of the party. Anybody who dissented, we know what happened to millions who dissent. This is destructive. Let me take it one step further. And you know who takes it that one step further? 400 years later, the Netziv. The Netziv. I'm going to read a number of very beautiful passages from the Netziv. Now, if we're to sum up, first of all, the Sephorno, what is it that the Sephorno, where does he see the sin? He sees the sin in the basic text. There's too much unity. Too much unity. Or, let's say, too much oneness. Too much oneness is bad. And wait a minute, and more than that, maybe let's go on, let's say that Sophronia does not see it as a sin because he says Vayered Hashem Lirot, God went down to see, which means right now things are not bad, but God knows that if this continues, it's going to reach a point where things are going to be terrible for man. Yes? Excellent.
What about Abraham?
He's talking
to unity, or what is the God? And he
sought
to convert everybody to
excellent.
One God.
But what is our messianic view of Vay Hashem LeMelech, God will be king on the earth? Yeah. Vay Hashem LeMelech HaKoretz, by Yom HaHu, on that day, Yashem Echad Ushmo Echad, God will be one and his name will be one. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation. There's going to be an absolute unity on the face of this earth. There will be. In other words, at the same time that that's the prophetic goal and purpose of the world, God now, at its beginnings, says, no, it can't, that can't be. Obviously, why? Because at the beginning of history, if there will not be difference of opinion, man will not develop. Man is going to have to develop his mind through difference of opinion. It's only after they're going to go through a few thousand years of history that finally the unity that they're going to achieve is going to be a positive unity. That's why the Sephorno says, it's not a, they didn't sin. They didn't sin. Vayeda Hashem, little God went down to see, and God saw that if there is no place for difference of opinion, it's going to be tragic. Until that great day when all mankind will think alike. There are other Mefarshim, and maybe I'll give you an insight into some of the other Mefarshim. What we see the beginnings of over here, what seems to be the beginning of man working together, really changes dramatically. In people living together and people building together, what is always going to emerge is all people are created equal, but there's one fellow who's more equal than them all. And that fellow who's more equal than them all gathers around him people who are going to be more equal than the rest of them. In order to understand that approach into the Dor HaFlogger, there's a pasuk earlier, and Chazal tell us that the first king, for all intents and purposes, on the face of this earth was a fellow by the name of Nimrod. The one who was who led the people to the valley and began the construction of the city was Nimrod. And Nimrod's intent was to make a name for himself. The moment that man becomes interested in making a name for himself, then you know what happens? Then the making a name for himself means it may very well have to be at the expense of others. That doesn't make any difference. I don't care how many people are going to have to suffer. Now, one thing that's fascinating, I haven't seen any of the Mefarshim say it, but I see it in... Take a look at Psukim Gimel and Dalet. Pasuk Gimel says, Vayomru Ish El Re'ehu, man said to his friend. What did man say to his friend? Let's make bricks. Okay? There was a joint effort. Man created bricks. What's the next pasuk? Vayomru, and they said, does it say Vayomru Ishel Re'ehu? Did they say one to another? No. I'm surprised. Maybe some of them, I haven't seen it in the Mefarshim. This is an extremely important clue. In the great technological advance, it's man and fellow man. When it comes to building the city and the tower, Vayomru, and they said, who are they? It's not man speaking to his friend. Do you know what has developed on the face of this earth? There's an elite society. There is a group, there is leadership. And when leadership says, Naselonu Shane, we're going to make a name for ourselves and we're going to build a tower, do you know what that means? That means the real beginnings of a society that's going to destroy the people it rules. The beginning of the ruling class starts now, and it's Nimrod, and it's Nimrod. All right, I'll take a number of other ideas a few steps forward, and then we'll take a look at some more of the Mefarshim. Has there been idolatry in this century? In the 20th century? What kind of idolatry? Money? Okay, I like that. Money? Science? Huh?
Power?
Humanism? Rationalism? Communism? Huh? Pop music? Say that again.
Film stars.
Okay. Film stars. The Rav Soloveitchik said some years ago in one of his shurim that here we're living in the 20th century. We seem to see ourselves in this century as people who have long ago left behind us pagan and heathen practices. Idolatry is something that we may study in history books, or we may yet find remnants of it in places like India and the darkest Africa. Says, no, it's wrong. In the 20th century, man reached the peak of pagan and heathen worship, idolatry. Who became the idol of the 20th century? Man. Man worshipped himself. Man has worshipped his own ability to resolve all problems. Man's great strides forward in technology, in science, in medicine, he thought that he was going to be able to resolve all of the world's problems. There's no need for anything aside from man's mind. And I've always asked the question, if there is a century that we would have the ability to remove it from history, which of all centuries should we remove from history? If there's one that we could relive, there's no question about it that man suffered more in the 20th century than in any of the previous centuries before it. And we're talking not only of the Shoah, and the Shoah was not only 6 million Jews, we're talking about 50 million people throughout the world. First World War, also 50, 60 million. Stalin destroyed 30, 40 million during the purges in the 30s. Mao Zedong, we'll never know how many. How many were killed by the Chinese Communist Party? He worshipped himself, and man is the most dangerous of all idols. It may be relatively easy to convince man that an idol made out of wood or metal is not an idol, but it's extremely difficult to convince man that he's not an idol, and he doesn't have the answers to all of the questions that trouble mankind. What's beginning over here, and it follows as it did in this century, it follows man's technological achievements. The moment man makes tremendous strides forward technologically, he begins to see himself as the one who can now do tremendous things. He has no need for anybody else. In this parasha, the great stride forward was the brick. Opened up tremendous possibilities for man. Today the brick, tomorrow the tower, and the day after that it's going to be the world. Into a society of that sort, the moment you have people who enter that society, and in any group there are going to be those who are going to try and move to the top. There's only one way you move to the top. You have to trample a lot of people below you. So therefore, Pasuk Dalet is the great technological advance. That in and of itself is magnificent. But what does it do to man? What does it do to man? And what does it do to people who want to benefit by it? You know what happens? You begin to create a group of people who are dictators, totalitarian. Watch now the Netziv. The Netziv tells us something very interesting. I haven't seen many of the other version. He sees Pasuk Dalet that talks about the building the city with the power going up to the heaven. Rather, Pasuk Gimel, where they've made a great kiln in which they're big fire and they're making bricks. He asks, why did we need that story? What was the point of that story? It may be that his question is, why do we need this finistrefa lestrefa? Big fire. They could have said, man created bricks. So he says, you know what? Now you know. Now you know what was in store for Avraham Avinu. What was the first great test of Avraham? Avraham is the one whom they throw into the Kibshon HaEsh, into the furnace. And if you want to know what kind of a Kibshon HaEsh it was, what kind of a furnace, it was creating the bricks for all of mankind. He sees Avraham as the antithesis of all that these people stand for. Do you know what it means? Mankind is soon going to reach a point that you know what you do with somebody who thinks otherwise? You know what you do with him? Mechaslim alto, you get rid of him. That's what God sees as the great tragedy that is unfolding over here. Man who wants to impose his will and his patterns of thought and his idea upon all other men. And that can be destructive of all of society. Do you know what it also means? It means something else. It means that there are moments in history where God has to intervene in order to make a mid-course correction in society. Otherwise, it may even be possible for God's great plan for the world to be frustrated. Man, in his willful evil, even holds in his power the ability to frustrate God's plan unless God goes down and does something about it. He has to intervene that moment in history. Let me read a few sentences from the Netziv. The Netziv says the following. Rosho Bashamayim, they want to make a tower that goes up to the very heavens. So he says, how can they make a tower of that sort? How can they make a city like that? They really thought they were going to make a city for everybody. You know what they had in mind? That there will be many satellite cities all around the big city. But leadership, dominion, is going to come only from the big city. They didn't really think that everybody is going to live there. They're going to be satellites to that big city that has the tower. And what was the tower for? The tower was in order to be able to... Big Brother Nimrod is watching you. Big Brother is looking around out from that tower, we know everything. Symbolically, it means man imposing upon and invading the life of every other human being. That's the danger. That's why they needed a tower going all the way up. The Naselanu Hashem. You know what it means? We're going to make a name for ourselves. Anoshim Masgichim Umunim Al Davar V'Yusarei Tzava LaHanish Et HaOver. Now, the whole purpose of the tower is that we should be able to watch all of mankind. If so, you know what it means? We're going to have to create an army, police, who are going to make sure that nobody is going to do otherwise or think otherwise. We have a plan. And we're not going to let any human being frustrate that plan. Pen nor foots, al pnei kol ha'aretz, lest we be dispersed throughout the world. He asks the question, what were they afraid of? You ask the question here. What were they afraid of if the group of people would go off? Some other part of the world. What were they afraid of? Umuvam, sheze haya shayach l'dvarim achadim shehaya b'neihem. That had to do with the idea that there were dvarim achadim between them. Ubasher ein deod bnei adam shavim, since men don't always think alike, they were afraid that people should not believe the opinion that they have established here. V'yu b'machshav acheret, people will think otherwise. Therefore, they felt as long as we have people nearby and we can watch them, we can control them. If they go elsewhere, do you know what may happen? They may begin to think for themselves. And that we can't permit. If they think otherwise, it can develop, yes, develop into an enemy, and who knows what's going to happen. Anybody who removed himself from this unity that was amongst them, you know what they did? Burned him in the Kibshan Eish, Kashet, also as they did to Avram Avinu. Which means, therefore, Sofa Achad, they had one language, Udvarim Achadim. Do you know what the Dvarim Achadim were? The upper class had decided amongst themselves, anybody who dares defy us, death to the one who defies. Right, so we see these are fascinating approaches. And what it really means, therefore, is that this parsha becomes a model for all of history. It's not a story merely that happened 3,500 years ago. We see the model for history, the totalitarian state, man who makes tremendous technological strides forward. And what comes into play? What is the emotion that comes into play? The emotion is ego. V'naseh lanu shem. We're going to make a name for ourselves. I believe it's Rav Shamsin of Fall Hirsch, and I don't think we'll be able to get to Hirsch. I suggest to you that you go through Hirsch on this parsha. It is he's magnificent. He's magnificent on this. Give me a social organization. Yes. You know when it could work? only time it's going to work, and that's the real answer that I was giving to your question before. When it's Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, when the ideal that infuses mankind is the knowledge of God and His morality, then democracy can work. If not, it could really be democracy today, and a democracy that will bring a dictator into power. Hitler, Yimach Shemayim, was elected democratically in Germany. A democracy can turn into a dictatorship very easily. The fact is, it's built into a democracy. In fact, the American Constitution has the Bill of Rights. The French Constitution, what do they have? The rights of man. Why does a constitution have to have a Bill of Rights? Simple. What's a democracy? A democracy is that the majority rules. What happens if 51% decide that the other 49 should be exterminated? Is that a democratic? Is that a democratic decision? We voted fair and square, and we decided that the 49% simply have to be exterminated. So we're going about and doing it. It's fair democracy. That's why democracy in and of itself has the seeds of the destruction of man built into it, unless man is given a Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights says, I have the right to life and the pursuit of happiness and prosperity and privacy in my own home. Whole list of rights, which means that even if the Congress of the United States and the Senate are going to vote not merely majority, but unanimously that we're going to destroy, I don't know, Dodger fans. It won't work. That's why you need a Bill of Rights, because there's a tremendous flaw in democracy in and of itself. You can destroy the world democratically. When will a democracy indeed be a proper form of government? When it becomes a government that, yes, in God we trust, or in God we believe, and that there is a divine morality. The divine morality is the ultimate Bill of Rights. They didn't have that. Which means for them, unity is the destruction of mankind. That's the point I wanted to get to. Their absolute unity is the absolute destruction of humanity. Can't work. Because they can simply, very, very easily, simply vote the rest of mankind out of existence. All right, we started a little late. We'll go another few minutes. I just want to give you a few other... What goes on in this robot of yours?
No, not a kid here.
Just give you a few insights of some of the... fascinating. I mean, there's so much to learn from each one of them. The Or HaChaim. If I can just give you a few words on the Or HaChaim and the Klei Yoker and what will be accomplished if you just try and do a little on your own. It's fascinating. The Or HaChaim asks the questions that have to be asked. He says, what was their intent in building a city? Why did they want to build one city for everybody? And yes, he says that our rabbis tell us that this was idolatry. What kind of idolatry? Incidentally, we have already explained in all of the approaches that we've taken till now, we can begin to understand Rashi. Rashi says that this was a rebellion against God Himself, because this is an attempt at frustrating God's plan for the world. It may be another way of destroying God's world. It may mean man placing himself in the position of the great deity in the world. That's what it can all mean. It doesn't necessarily have to be that man serve pagan and heathen gods, but man is serving himself and his own purposes, and that's idolatry. The Or HaChaim's approach is the following. God had given man the charge, pru urvu, be fruitful and multiply, umilu et haaretz, and fill the earth. That command was given to Adam HaRishon, first man, and then it was given again to Noah after he came out of the ark. If man is going to join together in one place, all of them, then what's going to happen with the spreading out throughout the world? God's plan is that his world should be inhabited. What our Achaim therefore is saying is, there's no sin and there's no punishment. According to our Achaim, there's no sin and there's no punishment. It's not really a sin in the sense of being destructive. But this would be a frustration of God's plan. God's plan for the world is spread them out. Move out. The only way in which they're going to move out is if they no longer can live together, they don't speak the same language. They don't understand one another. So they move out. According to all of the other misfortune that we spoke about, the fact that they speak different languages now means that there will be differences of opinion, and yes, it may be very important that they should live apart and separate until the great moment in history will come when they can rejoin one another together as one unified mankind. So therefore, the Or HaChaim's approach is that God wanted them spread out throughout the entire world. It may also be,
I take the... Huh?
They wanted to remain in one place. Could be. Maybe I'm reading in a little bit too much into it. I wonder whether the divine intention was that there should be big metropolitan areas of the world. The breeding ground of crime, of all of the worst ailments of man, come in the crowded cities of this world. I didn't say that everything in the big city is bad, but there's no question. I don't think God really wanted people to live in places like New York or Tokyo. There's no question about it that the breeding ground of the worst ills and ailments of society have come from the urban areas and not from the rural areas. There is an anonymity in the big city. The human being, the individual, is lost. The individual becomes lost in the big city. One is going to take a look at what Rav Shamshon Fol Hirsch has to say. The approach that he takes is that when a great society is developed and great leadership, what happens is that the individual is sacrificed on behalf of the greater cause. Great leaders have always been able to get the masses to in fact give their lives for the great goal. The great objective. Who sets the goal? Alexander the Great, Napoleon, or a Hitler? What happens in all of those societies? You know what happens? as it happened in the communist society. It's not that the state has to care for the individual. The state becomes the all-powerful and the all-important, and the individual is called upon to make every sacrifice for the state. The tzibur of the community becomes the goal and the objective, and the individual is lost. That's not the kind of world God wanted to create. State and community always have to know that they were created for the well-being of the individual. Of course, if the individual together with the rest of community are under attack, of course people are going to give their lives. But what's happened is that the individual was sacrificed on the altar of society, on the altar of the community. At the turn of the century, the Russians built the Trans-Siberian Railway. They built a railway 3,000 miles going through the steppes of Central Asia, through the snow of Siberia. Russians died like flies for the fatherland or for the motherland in order to put another spike into the ground. There was no concern for the well-being of the individual. The state took on a life of its own. And that life of its own meant that your life is not important. The life of the state is important. The Medrash says it so beautifully. The Medrash says, if a brick would fall and would shatter, they would begin to cry and say, Mi yitein lanu tmurato, who's going to give us another brick? And if a man would fall and die, they just keep going and building along. Man became the object that was being used for society. That's the destructive nature of the Dor HaFlaga. Man, in his great advances, forgot fellow man. The state, the leader, the dictator, the chairman, he became the all-important and the all-significant one. And the little man in the street, lost, forgotten. If you keep thinking about this parasha, there is so much that's being said to all of mankind. In every generation, there's something good, something to learn from this parasha. And we can keep going on for hours about it. But what you have to see is how each one of the mafarshim, in a sense, takes one word or one phrase, and to them, that phrase is important. Rav Avadim is Sifurno, Vayeret Hashem Lidot, God goes down to see. So therefore, if God sees, if he's looking, it means that it's not terrible yet, but in the course of time, something may happen here that's going to be terrible. The Netziv takes a look at the words Nisr, for the Sreifa, they're making big fires. Who has to know that they're making big fires? There are those who just take a look at the whole parasha and say that it's so strange, it's an enigma, it's a riddle, it doesn't seem that they've done anything terrible. The beauty of the parasha is that the Torah does not tell us specifically and precisely what they did. You know why? Because all of what is said by all of the mafarshim indeed is meant by Torah. So therefore there's a great deal that you can read into it. It can be a word, it can be a phrase, it can be the position of a word or a phrase, or as I had pointed out, even the absence. If one place it says, Vayomru ish el Reyehu, and in the next pasuk it says, Vayomru, that means we've moved from one class of people to a very special class of people who are going to be the great so-called leaders. So the story of the Tower of Babel is not the story of something that took place a long, long time ago. It happens to be all of the weaknesses of man and the dangers that are inherent in society are all outlined over here. Okay, I think we'll... That was enough. We'll stop here.